Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Happy Friday. Today is October 19th, 2018, and I'm Michelle Pichet filling in for Jeannie. I'm here today with our hosts, Dr. Michael Rice and Dr. Timothy Hayes, and we warmly welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is one I can't remember the second, 566, blanking.
563-999-3581.
Press 1, and that will put you into queue to talk with our host, and I'll open your microphone, and we'll get you talking with Tim, it sounds like. So let's welcome Tim in support of developing our inner process of Aramaic forgiveness. Thank you.
And Michael should be here.
Okay, I'm not sure. I appreciate it. I heard my microphone turn on at the last minute, and I appreciate that support. And Michael, love to hear from you.
I am here.
Awesome.
I'm here, and welcome, everybody. I'm delighted and honored that you're part of this process as we engage in deepening our understanding of this amazing set of tools that comes out of the first century Aramaic and is reinforced in the Course in Miracles, which just kind of puts the picture all together and the puzzle all together. And so we're delighted and honored that you're here to be part of that process. And I'm certainly honored to be a part of the process. And our Course in Miracles lesson today, I believe, is lesson 293. I think we did 292 yesterday, so 293. And the key thought in this lesson is, excuse me, somebody just dialed in on top of me here. The key thought in our lesson, 293 from A Course in Miracles, is all fear is past and only love is here. And that, of course, to a mind that's based in hostility and fear, seems like an absolutely ludicrous idea because there are all kinds of things to fear. And the fallacy of that lies in the fact that our minds have been, over generations and generations and generations, filled with fear. And so it seems like it is a necessary component of life. And our offering is that that's just not true. When we remember who we are, and break that word down, remember, become a member once again of who you are, a member of the human race, hold a newborn child and experience directly what the active presence of love is, what your true human life is. Everything else is an illusion. Now, illusion doesn't mean it didn't happen. Illusion doesn't mean it doesn't exist. The root of the word illusion in Aramaic is measured. You remember Yeshua 2,000 years ago in Aramaic says, as you measure it, we measure it unto you. As you put an energy into your field, you will get to live with the impact of that energy and the results that it draws to you. And so to recognize that if I'm in fear, my thinking is off base, and it's time for me to correct my thinking. Elsewise, with fear-based thinking hidden or blamed on someone else, will always draw a circumstance that will seem to justify that fear. Our offering is that that's the moment where you realize, I'm in fear. I have forgiveness to do. This is my work now. is to move through and let loose of this fear or sadness or rage or guilt. So once you remove the source of fear and other emotions, those emotions are gone no matter what happens in your world.
Michael,
Yes, sir.
Your volume just went down appreciably.
Oh, excuse me. Is that better?
Yes.
Good. Okay. I had let the microphone slip a little bit. Excuse me. Thank you. So the forgiveness process is about accessing the root of all hostility and fear and removing it from your structure so that should an event occur that yesterday would inspire or resonate great fear in you, you simply go, oh, I can remember when I'd have been in terror about this one, and, gee, I don't like that it's happening, but I can be a space of conscious, active, present love for this. And that becomes the transformer of everything. And our job in this world is pretty simple at this point, to bring that presence of love forward in every circumstance, in every event, in every situation. So the lesson goes on to say, all fear is past. And it's past because its source is gone. All of the thoughts based in hostility and fear are gone with it. Love remains the only present state whose source is here forever and forever. So, recognizing, and to the mind that's based in hostility or fear, this just sounds plain silly. And in fact, I've seen people get enraged when you offer them thoughts like that. And of course, why would someone be enraged when they're offered thoughts like that? Because there's rage in them. I've seen people grief-stricken over that. And why would they be grief-stricken? Because there's grief in them. So when life brings up something other than that full active presence of love, that's when the tool of forgiveness is applied to access, expose the root of that aberrant energy to love and dissolve it, remove it, so it's simply not part of your structure anymore. So that's where we want to head. So the question then is asked, can the world seem bright and clear and safe and welcoming with all past mistakes oppressing it and showing me disoriented forms of fear? Well, when we allow the clouds to cover the truth of being, it seems like the only thing available is the darkness brought on by the clouds. But it's a good analogy. When you look up at the sky filled with clouds, it looks dark, it looks ominous, but behind it is the sunshine, untouched by the clouds. The truth of your being is untouched by anything your mind has been clouded with. And that's the bottom line of it all. To remember that, to reconnect with that, is the objective. And if the presence of love is not obvious, it's because our minds have a different idea. And it's time for us to learn to forgive all ideas based in hostility and fear, and to return to the truth of who we are as human beings, as that presence of love that we are designed out of and designed for. So we want to head into recognizing, reconnecting with that state of love, and understanding who it is that we really are, what it is that we are really made of, which is this presence of love. And if you ever forget that, just hold a newborn child and be reminded. Well, but Michael, I'm not there all the time. Well, that's okay. That's just part of the process of waking up, is stepping into that recognition of who you are and reconnecting with the truth. And you'll know you're making progress when you can, in the middle of the mind's muddle, take a breath and simply touch the presence of love in you. Allow the mind to be still for a moment. It is the mind that is filled with all this noise and all this trauma. Allow it for a moment to be still. Allow it to be reconnected to the source that thinking is designed to come from. And as we do that, it becomes easier and easier to remember, to really, truly understand who we are and to live in the truth of who we are as this presence of love. So that, in essence, is our object here. And excuse me, I inhaled some water. So the objective, excuse me, that was rude. When the presence of love is obvious, its effects become apparent. All the world shines in reflection of its holy light. That is the light of the wholeness of your being. And I get to perceive a world forgiven now. Recognize what the Course is saying with this. It's not saying, oh, I've forgiven everybody out there, so that world is forgiven. Remember that the world you live in is a world of perception. It is generated from the data that's inside of you. And when you forgive everything based in hostility or fear, that world of hostility and fear forgiven, that is removed.
Michael, why don't you just take a moment and breathe and clear your throat and
yes.
And don't race on, just clear your throat. And I think what you were going to say is that when that false perceptive world is removed, I have an option to see far more clearly the magnificence, the splendor, the limitlessness of what the Creator created, what's there beyond just what's obvious to my five senses, and what I can tap into higher faculties to gain awareness of through that still small voice or my intuition. And the beginning of that for me is always with the breath, to slow down, take that full deep breath, pause at the top, resist the exhale, let it go out nice and slow. And when I do that, I have to slow down the racing of the mind to gently focus on what else might be there in the physical perceptions and the intuition and the little nudges to look in this direction or be aware of that. And there's always a bigger picture, as Guy Finley would say. There's always more to see, especially when I'm in any kind of contraction or fear or negative emotion.
Well, Jim, that was exactly what I was going to say. Right?
Well,
on
see,
track.
I just read your mind.
There you go. I'm willing. So the lesson goes on to say that all the world shines in reflection of the light of your wholeness. And I get to perceive this world free of its hostility and fear. The meditative aspect of this lesson? Father, let not your world of love escape my sight today. Let me realize and exist where I am in this presence of love. If my ears have been deaf to all of the gratitude the world sings underneath the sounds of fear, let my ears be opened. There is a real world which the present holds safe from all past mistakes. And I would see only this world before my eyes today. Now, if I have some use for the hostility and fear-based mind, then that's going to become an impossibility. So the willingness to give up that hostility and fear-based mind becomes a requirement to achieve this state of the possible. And it's a delight and an honor to have you here with us to engage in this conversation. Dr. Tim, how are you today, sir? Anything to share with us from practice, from patterns you're seeing? What's happening?
Well, I'm doing quite well. I was thinking about just stepping in briefly to what we were ending the show with yesterday, and someone had had either texted or emailed Jeannie with an observation that they perceived that when you spoke about Judge Kavanaugh and or the adolescents that wrote notes to your granddaughter telling her to end her life, etc., they perceived that you were not holding any compassion for those others. And their perception in listening to your words was that there was this hypocrisy going on, that you were being selective in where you were placing your compassion or the application of the tools. And what I was pointing out is that my perception is so active, it's such a distorting power, that I can sit in a room of 6 or 12 people watching a Michael Rice video or a Guy Finley lecture, and I can take away an entirely different set of conclusions and perceptions than the person sitting right next to me. And so, you know, there was a rather dramatic incidence of this on the Tuesday support group, in my Tuesday support group, where one of the members in the group heard me saying that she has to do this and she has to do that and she has to do that and she has to do that thing. And as she was rattling off this list of things that she heard me say she had to do, two other group members turned to me in that rapid double take with this questioning look on their face and mouthed words like, "When did you say that?" So what I like to do in my life is, what I find so useful is that when I get a tension, when I get a frustration, when I think somebody's telling me to do something and it resonates a resistance in me, I like to take a breath and get centered and ask, how am I creating this resistance, this tension, this judgment, and release it before going back in my mind and replaying what was said and or asking for clarification. Because I create all of my anger, fear, sadness, grief, tension, and I do it by the way I interpret and then choose to respond to the things I hear and see and feel. So that would be my first point. The second point is that you've already covered in your reply yesterday, which is that it's entirely possible to send a blessing to people and to hold compassion for them and make the observation that what they're doing is harmful to themselves or someone else, that what they're doing is other than appreciation of light and love and compassion and the extension of love and beauty. So it's entirely possible to do that and to say to somebody, because you chose these actions, there were these consequences, and we as individuals or as a community will hold you responsible for that. There will be consequences for these actions, just as a parent would with a child. To say, well, you know, you were supposed to be in by 10 o'clock, but you didn't call and you didn't come home, and it's 12:45, and you finally walk in and you're trying to act like there's nothing wrong, and that's a problem, so there's going to be consequences. I love you. I hope you make better decisions in the future, and here's the consequence. It isn't a punishment. It's a way to say, here's what I can use that I have control over to send you a good, clear, strong message that this is not acceptable. Here's what I can use by focusing on the things I have control over to let you know how strongly I feel about the choices you're making and whether or not they're having a positive or a negative impact on you and those around you. And this is a rarely discussed perspective in our culture, and yet it's entirely possible to do this. It's entirely possible to feel love and compassion for a person, whether they're an underage, you know, toddler or preteen or teen or young adult, or full-blown adult and still communicate clearly to them that their choices have consequences. So that's what I was going to add at the beginning of the show today. And if you're there, Michael, you're muted.
Well, Tim, you remind me, excuse me, I'd accidentally hung up and dialed back in, but you remind me of the line that I like to refer back to often from the movie The Accountant. Pretty violent movie, and not one I particularly suggest you see unless you're do some worksheets and work through some violence, because it'll resonate that. But there's a line in a song at the end of it that says, "I can't read a book I haven't written." And no matter what words we read, we think we read the words on a page, our listening, the meaning we give it, early lesson, the course is, I've given this all the meaning it has for me. And the meanings I give to things always tell me more about my mind than the world I think I'm looking at. When I'm ready to and willing to accept that feedback, wow, I advance monumentally in my process. And if I'm asked to be responsible for what's happening in my mind and I go into some form of hostility or fear, then I now have the opportunity to look at how my mind produces this hostility and fear and whether or not I'm willing to be responsible for it and forgive it, get free of it. So we're here to support that perspective and to do our own work. And I certainly, if I'm off base, appreciate anyone who calls me on it because, you know, we all can be in that state of blockage of truth. We can miss something. So feedback is always appropriate. And so this is the work of forgiveness and the work of learning these tools. Michelle, any thoughts for you, young lady?
Wow, that's quite a conversation. And I appreciate the invitation to give feedback. It's really more of a question and kind of a thought that started at the end of the show yesterday. And so ideally I had planned to re-listen to the show so that I could comment more intelligently on this versus my memory of the show. But I'm going to do my best. And so as I recall, the person who, it was near the end, they had their bike stolen. And then they talked about going to turn this lemon into lemonade by going out and buying 10 bikes for 10 needy kids and then finding the thief eventually and having compassion for their need to steal the bike in the first place and, you know, relaying a message that so what came of it was a good positive thing. And as far as that story goes, then Jeannie came on and she had read a text, I believe, from somebody who was referring to the classmate who had bullied your granddaughter related to, you know, her attempt and success at suicide. And then the person wrote that they wondered about, it seemed to be an absence of compassion in your dialogue, what you were sharing that day. And so you replied, but the focus of attention on your response was related to the idea of holding a space of love for the person in terms of holding them accountable and that there are consequences and that this isn't, you know, as much as a punishment, but communicating to the person the lack of accessibility in their behavior and that they're harmful to other folks and, you know, that there are consequences. So inherent in that, though, is that there seems to be an implied causality between the boy's communication and a potential trigger or contribution of trigger for her to take her life and make that choice, which then seems to contradict what we're always trying to heal from, in that the cause of our perception, our experience, our generated reality has something to do with anything outside of ourselves.
Well, that's not exactly the message, Michelle. That's not exactly
well,
the message.
Well, I'm not. The message of...
Go ahead.
Well, what Tim just reiterated was this idea of consequences and being holding accountable. But the accountability seems like that his choices were contribution to her choices.
And no doubt about it, that's accurate. So that's why I'm saying the message you're taking from the work is not an accurate message here.
Okay. So
the point being that we live in interaction with many other people. Now, the person who's completed doing their work in a state of purity and connected to love has no hostility or fear in them. Somebody can come and pour all the put downs, the ugly language, the viciousness they want on that person, and that person can stand there and go, looks like maybe you have a problem. But remember that there are three places that we create our lives from. You go back to the codependence workshop and we talk about this. There is a controlled life, there's a driven life, and there's an inspired life. The controlled life is the life where one has certain internal dynamics and usually has been in relationship with a power person who has exercised as much control over that individual as possible, usually through hostility or fear. And so the external world presents an energy. This person, without understanding or being able to filter that energy, is impacted by that energy according to what it resonates in them. So there is an influence there. There's just, you know, that's the way energy systems work. They are influencers of each other. And one who has not forgiven the power person dynamics of control is going to tend to be controlled pretty much totally by their environment. And as you do your work, you'll notice, you know, certain people make certain choices or decisions, and those choices or decisions bring up some sort of pain or trauma in me. And I act according to my pain and trauma influenced by those choices or decisions. And you'll notice as you do your work, the impact or the control that others exercise over us tends to dissipate and disappear as I do my work. And so, you know, there's no message here that says somebody's breathing loud in the phone. If you could put that on mute, whoever's breathing into the phone. So there's no message here that says we don't influence each other. Again, the ideal state, perfectly healed, nobody could have any influence whatsoever. Sadly, that's not where we are, especially a 13-year-old girl who already has some parts of her that hold trauma towards self, you know, a power person that was an alcoholic and a drug addict, you know, her stepmother, or her mother, and, you know, that those dynamics, until she gets the tools and moves through them, they're going to be influenced by others. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why, and I love to quote William James, who's considered to be the father of modern psychology, and William James says this: the three most important things in the world are these: kindness, number one; number two, kindness; number three, kindness. And so I want to be real clear and acknowledge we do impact each other. The things we say and the things we do create an energy that impacts the internal energetic dynamics, which leads to the second level. So one is the controlled life. The second is the driven life. where one is driven by internal dynamics that they just can't help themselves. You know, that's the typical OCD. This energy is triggered off in them and it drives them. They must do a behavior that is linked to whatever it is that's been triggered in them. So that would be the controlled life. Then the inspired life is a person who's totally in tune with being, has nothing left of hostility or fear within their physiology, and lives out of an inspired state where that mind that was called the mind of Christ, the mind of love in them, is what inspires all behavior and creative activity. So when we all arrive there, you're right. But in the meantime, that's not where everybody is. And again, particularly a 13-year-old girl. So to me, whoever it was that wrote these notes are kids who, not recognizing the impact they have on each other, the impact that their power persons have had on them, don't know any better and just go on with their viciousness. So to me, the idea of accountability there would be to bring to awareness the impact that we have on each other and to support that person in returning to a human life, returning to the active presence of love and functioning out of the active presence of love, where uttering such a thought as was put in writing toward this child would be an impossibility. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Cool. Any other thoughts? Any thoughts for you, Tim?
Michelle, any other thoughts?
The thought that's coming up right now for me is that, like, you know, does this change, you know, my belief that maybe my husband did hurt me, you know, as far as his choices, his behaviors, and as far as applying these tools. And you know, then I'm like, well, am I compelled, more responsible than others because I have tools and I have awareness? And that even though it appears that, you know, his choices are hurtful, that I need to untie that. You know, I guess I'm just looking at, like, what does he have a consequence for his choices toward me?
Right. So his karma is going to be his karma, but you'll notice, and I'm just going to sharing from, you know, the years that we've worked together and I've watched you working through this relationship issue with your husband, is that you'll notice that there was a time when he had total power appear to cause pain in you, the words he would say, the behaviors he would do. And you'll notice that today, and you know, we talked with this with someone the other day about how, yeah, we weaken and weaken and weaken the influence or the response within us until we're back into human beingness. You'll notice that today he perhaps says some of the same things. Did he hurt you 5 years ago when he did that? In no way, shape, or form. But he did behaviors that triggered hurt in you, and you've been taking responsibility and forgiving that hurt in you. So notice that he can do some of those behaviors today, and you go, so what? Because you've stopped hurting yourself over that. If there is no hurt in me, no one can appear to hurt me. If it appears to me that someone can hurt me, we need to mute somebody there. If it appears to me that someone can hurt me, then they are acquainting me with another part of my mind that holds the energy in me that's off the mark, that doesn't belong here, and it's my opportunity to forgive that. And again, it's a process. It takes time to do. It's not something once we're introduced to it that anybody changes. At least I've never met anybody that changes it overnight. So did he ever hurt you? No. Could he ever hurt you? No. Does hurt come up in you today maybe when he says certain things? Perhaps. Is there a whole lot less hurt coming up in you when he says certain things today than there was 5 years ago? That's a reflection of your work.
Okay, so then is the need for consequence dependent upon, you know, the victim, so to speak, level of consciousness?
Well, I think, you know, for me, I would put in terms of rather than consequence so much as to open the space for healing and accountability. And, you know, perhaps, you know, if you look at, say, for instance, your small child, you know, you've got a 3-year-old, you're going to, as an adult, watching them doing things that are a danger to themselves, you're going to set up consequences. You're going to help them to see the results of what they're doing in a way that they can connect, that their minds can produce conceptual structures that show them that this result that I don't like is connected to that behavior. I think I'll stop doing that behavior. Then the next level of that for me would be, and I want to support this person in recognizing the energetic dynamics with which they are damaging their own lives and support them coming to healing. You know, the whole world, you know, we're in the punishment planet. You know, virtually everybody thinks, oh, they did something bad, they should be punished. Hitler should be punished. Mussolini should be punished. This one, that one, that one, that one. You know, Trump is doing all these things, he should be. I there's not one iota of punishment that's ever done anybody any good. Now, I've had people who come back to me and say, well, you know, when I was a kid, I got my share of beatings and it never hurt me. And my offering to that person would be, that's a lie. You're not in touch with hurt, but I guarantee you, because I've watched hundreds and hundreds of people do it, I guarantee you that if you went back to the moment where that original hurt, that slap in the face, that ugly look that the power person gave, that verbal abuse that the power person offered, the energy of hostility toward the child, the pain and the hurt was unbearable. And that's why it was dissociated from and put into the unconscious. And that is why whenever that pain starts to peek its head up again, until I learn and understand and have the tools, I'm going to blame it on somebody else. Look, you gave me that look. Well, that's the look that resonates what happened when I was 3. And the person says, well, it never hurt me. Yeah, it hurt them deeply, deeply, deeply. And as they awaken, they can process that energy out of the system. And to me, the whole idea of this work is to support people and bring people to that state of healing beyond pointing out consequence. That's a stage in development. But beyond that, you know, you go back, and I think it was Paul who said, you know, there are people in the work that they're just at the stage where you give them milk. You don't give them meat yet. They're not ready for it. They can't digest that level of responsibility. So that's where you help the child to connect the behavior with the result. And, you know, if the behavior could be produce a really disastrous result, as a parent, you might set up a minor painful, you know, something that this child's going to inflict pain on themselves and realize it until they connect it so that in the future they can say, oh, if I do this behavior, I can end up with a disaster. And then the next phase, when somebody's ready for the deeper parts of the work, is, okay, now we can bring this person to a space where they've got the tools and they can recognize the hostility, the fear, the pain, the trauma within them and process it through and process it out. Is that fitting? Make sense for you?
Actually, that was very helpful, the example of the 3-year-old and being able to guide them and lead them into understanding consequences is really helpful.
Yeah, you can't take the 3-year-old and say, well, let's see, we'll sit down and we'll do this worksheet and I'll show you how to cancel your goals and forgive them. They're not at a consciousness where they can do that. And there are a lot of people running around in what appear to be adult bodies that are still functioning at the level of a 2 or 3-year-old, still functioning out of the pain and the trauma that's been unresolved from that age. And so it takes time. You've heard me say it before. I think you've sometimes been a little bit resistant to the idea, 5 to 10 years for people to really get it, to really shift out of those old dynamics and start to really comprehend what the work is really about.
Days are over.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to storm the gates, but can't be done. And I acknowledge you for the the depth of work you've done, the willingness you've had, the things you've faced, some pretty heavy duty stuff, and process through. It's awesome to watch. Awesome to be part of. Glad to be on your team and watching you pass it along to people. I'm glad to have you on ours.
Thank you. You know, I every time I open a new app with a client and then they have to register 517, I always think like, ooh, do you see another 517 over there? A quick story,
right.
And then I got something from the chat room. As far as the acknowledgement of doing the work, thank you. And that I found myself nauseous 2 days ago and got stronger and stronger till I started throwing up and I had to leave work and then spent the rest of the afternoon and evening in bed. And that hasn't happened in 5.5 years. And I know my patterns well enough and really was initially fearful that I was getting sick in that same old way and that whatever I had cleared so long ago was going to be coming back. And then my next thought was thinking, like, why is this happening to me again kind of thing? And the response was, well, because you've been doing more of the right thing. And the fact is, in the previous 5 days leading up to that moment, I had been doing a real intense Bikram hot yoga workout where you're just like sitting and sweating for an hour and a half, 2 hours, because the heat builds up so much in your body that it's just pushing everything out. And, you know,
that'll build your vitality and energy flow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It sure did. And then, you know, it was almost like an overload of toxins and it just sort of took me out. But I was telling Jeannie, the great part is that it was like I was in, I was out, because I had used like other things that I know, breathing and tapping and pushing on pressure points and, you know, physically, you know, salt bath and just these different things that over time and was able to move that energy better than normal. And it didn't feel as much like, oh, that wasn't a disease. That was just a clearing of a, you know, extra physical layer. It was just popping up, just kind of like tidying up.
Well, I noticed.
So I was excited about the. Go on.
Cool. Well, let's go just a little further with that. Notice that you're doing this high energy work and you're hitting another level of vitality, and you talk about it being a physical layer, but I'll just invite you, and you might want to do some worksheets around that. What came up at the same time as that energy started to move was fear, the forgiveness of the fear around that is one of the major components that'll rid your field totally of that disorder that was your constant companion for so many years. Is the fear that is the initiator of the toxicity. And that would be what needs to be forgiven.
All right.
Breathing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm
sweet.
Left to where it's connected to, but I'm willing to explore that.
Cool. Sweet. Well, you've got something in the chat room or something for us?
Yeah, let me share that so we can acknowledge lightness of being. It says, I need a mind shifter as it has been difficult to see my son in a toxic relationship of 6.5 years. The girlfriend has many phobias, eating disorders, mental and physical problems, also intense controlling issues. She can't hold a job for very long, and she needs to get her way in many situations. Apparently, she took a knife out in a conflict with him recently. So, understanding she has abandonment issue, her mother's bipolar, they're living with the grandma, and she's also really controlling. Her son sees the situation and sees that she's like the father, very controlling, but can't seem to put, to terminate the relationship. So the mind shifter I'm thinking is for lightness of being related to concerns about her son's well-being. Maybe she can clarify that.
Sure. My take would be to go to a different place with it, and both would probably be appropriate. But, you know, remember that the perceptual constructs of our minds always tell us more about the content of our minds than the world we think we're looking at. And in, you know, three lines of written text, we've identified the perceptual construct that there's a girlfriend who's controlling, there's a grandmother who's controlling, and there's a father who's controlling. Might be good to do a mind shifter that says, it's safe and healing for me to look at and heal all of my desire to control. It's safe and healing for me to look at and heal all of my desires to control. So that might be a good starting point. And another mind shifter might be, you know, I don't know what position you have with your son and being able to share with him, but you might invite him to look at and to yourself work toward the safety of being able to process with him directly what is going on and support him in seeing it clearly. So, you know, maybe a mind shifter of, you know, my son is always open to every communication that I give him. And you'll know that's an appropriate mind shifter. First thing your mind says is, BS, who are you trying to get? He doesn't want to hear anything from me. So there's another piece of work that will perhaps open the space for communication to happen with the son. And a third mind shifter, it's easy for me to be the space of love. It's easy for me to be the space of love when I see my son's girlfriend, his father, which I assume is your former, and grandmother being controlling. It's easy for me to be the space of love, to name those three objects of attention, when I perceive them as controlling. And that will open the next depth of what needs to move for you around that control issue, I think. Do you have any thoughts for her, Michelle, or Dr. Tim?
No, I think that's great. When I was reading it, I had those, I had some similar thoughts, and I thought, I'm not going there. Michael can go there.
So, let me play John the Baptist, eh?
Yeah, well, kind of, because it's like, you know, you can tell that the concern is sincere, but then when you step back, like, oh, whoa, this is about me all day.
Yeah, and we hold the space, you know, it's just, you know, that's the kind of issue that when we become vital enough and willing enough, we start to surface and are able to start to process through. And then when I can stand in the space of the person who's the ultimate controller, which might be myself, and bring love present, then I become the healer of those dynamics and all of the world starts to free itself up that dynamic.
So, Lightness of Being wants to clarify that the language that was used were the words used by her son in describing the situation, not necessarily their own. Like, because he's not himself very happy with the situation.
No.
So,
well,
again,
there's
the
space to offer him the tools.
Right, the son... issues about control or lack thereof or how he perceives that. So that's a good good inquiry. Thank you, Lightness.
Yay.
So let's go back to, let's see, nobody with a hand up. They said thank you.
Cool. Well, Pierre Pradovan, the fellow who wrote The Gentle Art of Blessing that Dr. Tim introduced to us a couple of years ago, I came across a post of his today and I just thought I was just strongly inclined to read it. He's got some really sweet insights that just tap right into, you know, this idea of the course of when I'm healed, I'm never healed alone. And so he wrote this on September 10th, 2018. You are me and I am you. One of the more amazing and beautiful aspects of the internet is that it's becoming the most powerful tool ever to spread ideas instantaneously worldwide, including the growing sense of one world consciousness and our oneness with all life. Little by little, it is assisting us to go beyond the old, tired, dualistic vision of the world and to spread ever more widely and rapidly the non-dualist consciousness that we are all linked, for better or for worse, to borrow an expression out of the traditional Anglican marriage liturgy. More and more we are witnessing how an ever-growing number of people are developing an awareness that we are linked in a manner that goes far beyond anything we have ever dreamed of. The prophet Isaiah foresaw this with uncanny sharpness 2,500 years ago, describing the good deeds of the spiritually enlightened individual in what is nothing else than a remarkable program of social justice. He then says of that person, quote, then your light shall break forth as the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. That's Isaiah 58:8. Never looked at that passage before, but then your light shall break forth as the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. What is it that I can't hold that light for? If I can't hold to that light in the presence of some behavior, then my healing seems to be unavailable to me. So he goes on to express, in other words, our healing depends upon the healing of the world. In this exciting new vision, every progress I make for myself, I make for the whole world. Polio or cancer patient who overcomes his or her disease through active participation in the healing process helps all others afflicted with the same disease on the whole planet. Every time you replace hatred with love, overcome your nagging desire for the umpteenth last drink, replace your usual biting retort to your companion with silence or, why not, kindness, you are helping all of those on the planet struggling with the same challenge, be it in an infinitesimal manner. Which drop of water constituting an ocean is unimportant. The longest mile is made up of many inches, and each one brings us closer to home, brings us closer as the race and as individuals, pardon me, as a race and as individuals, to the realization that whatever the present aggressive material appearances to the contrary, there is only one infinite mind running the show. We are all motivated by the same infinite love that gave birth to us all. We are all joined by the same universal consciousness. As Mary Baker Eddy, an American metaphysician of the last century, wrote, the divine understanding reigns in all, and there is no other consciousness. In other words, nothing else has any life. We can all be positive agents, he says, of positive change. My Texas friend and teacher, Roger McGowan, spent 25 years on death row in Texas for a crime we know he never committed. Every progress he makes toward, you know, he's talking about forgiveness in the old sense, but and I'm going to shift his language a little bit because he's talking about him forgiving the jailers. Every progress he makes toward the internal forgiveness of the dynamics that he interacted with his jailers through, all of that helps all of the other innocents on death row in the USA and elsewhere worldwide to step closer toward forgiveness. Every Anita Morjani who writes about their near-death experience and that's really a near-life experience, with a very powerful vision of divine love and everlasting life, helps people all around the world overcome their fear of punishment and death. Every single one of us, and the married ones of us, can become an agent of positive change by focusing thought in a certain manner. I will illustrate this by two examples. The first one is striving for win-win solutions in every single area of one's life. The old fatigued lose-win model, which has dominated so much of human existence in so many areas, especially the economy, will have to disappear for us to survive as a race. The world is far too interconnected to be able to survive on the basis of the Paleolithic Darwinian model of relations. In every single area of our lives, each of us can start striving for win-win relationships, from the use of our time to spending money, adjusting our schedules so that they work out for every member of the family or colleagues at work, to respect we have for the environment. In societies that are so dominated by money, tithing, for instance, can be a most exciting and even fun method of managing money in a win-win manner, an easy way to uplift the world consciousness. The second one is the practice of blessing. For those who aren't familiar with it or haven't been on a show where Tim's talked about it or we've talked about it, there's a book by Brattervand entitled The Gentle Art of Blessing. Powerful, powerful book. This blessing is one of the simplest and easiest manners of uplifting the world consciousness. There's hardly a moment in life during which it is not possible to bless. In the street, on the bus, or the underground, at work, at home, with your companion or family, your silent blessings will uplift and heal. We live in a world where large numbers of our contemporaries feel completely powerless when contemplating the challenges facing the human race. The practice described above offers extraordinary encouragement to every single individual who wishes to undertake something meaningful and help to create a saner world. Every single progress we make for the whole world, because I am me and you are me, and I am you and you are you, and together we are one. Ties right in with that Einstein thought where he says, if you think you're separate or separate, and this is a physicist thing, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. Time to awaken from the optical delusions. And so we're down to the last minute or so. Any other thoughts for you, Michelle, Tim?
No, thank you. It's been real helpful, and looks like Tim's dropped off for now, so... Why don't we close out the show?
Well, just saying, everybody, thank you for being with us, and create the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and we hold through the blessing. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes, and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.